back to Vandenberg Flash Focus, your source for fast and focused foreign policy analysis on breaking news from around the world. Today we have a bit of a special episode. Our guest just returned from Ukraine, where she traveled extensively throughout the country, including to many areas that have been devastated by Russia's war of aggression. While there have been several expert trips to Ukraine since Russia launched its full-scale invasion almost 2 years ago, few have had the opportunity to travel so far east and see so many different cities, including Odessa, Kherson, Kryvyi, Dnipro, Kharkiv, Kyiv, and Lviv. Heather Nauert served as the spokesperson for the U.S. Department of State from 2017 through 2019, as well as the acting Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs. Prior to her government service, she spent nearly 20 years covering the world's most consequential stories as an anchor and reporter for ABC and Fox News. Heather, welcome to Flash Focus.
Hey, Sam. Great to be with you. Thank you.
So I understand you just returned from a trip to Ukraine with other American foreign policy leaders. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience there? You know, what did you see? Who did you meet with? And where did you go?
Yeah, Sam, we went on a 1,300-mile road trip through a war zone. Imagine that. We started in Moldova next door, which is a very small, poor country that basically has no defense. We traveled through there, then into Odessa in the south. That's where the port is, where Ukrainians have retaken that port. The port's now open for business, which is a great success story. And then we traveled up through the north, through the sort of the breadbasket region in the middle, Kherson, up to Dnipro, and then ultimately to Kharkiv, which is under constant attack. And then out through Kyiv, through a train back through Poland. So in total, 1,300 miles, getting as close to the front lines as we could get, talking with Ukrainian military, talking with Ukrainian civilians, and talking with lots of folks all throughout the country to see what was going on there firsthand.
So for most of our listeners and most people in America, I think Ukraine has really been, the story has been gobbled up by the news cycle and the political cycle. Talking with people and being on the ground there, what do Americans who are just kind of following along, even educated, you know, well-informed policymakers, what do Americans not realize about the situation on the ground? And what do people that you talk to want Americans to understand about what they're going through?
Yeah, there's actually a lot that Americans aren't getting, which is why it was terrific to see it firsthand, especially as a former reporter. Point one, no place was safe in the country. We have the perception as Americans that just a small section of Ukraine, those front lines, is under attack. That's not the case at all. Russia is constantly firing ballistic missiles, using explosive drones and rockets to target civilian structures all throughout the country. So that's sort of point one. No place is safe in the country of Ukraine. And we had air raid alerts that were constantly going off day and night, regardless of where we were in the country. So this is the life that regular Ukrainians are living, constantly under this fear of attack. We saw buildings, apartment buildings, homes that had been struck by Russian missiles and rockets, and sadly, civilians dying in that country. So that's sort of point one. Point two is, you know, Ukraine is not asking for a handout. You see, as soon as a building is struck in that country, you see all kinds of Ukrainians there cleaning up and then grabbing plywood and some 2x4s and starting to rebuild. It's a really strong community of people, and that's something very different from what we are used to seeing as Americans when a place is under attack. Often countries that we will provide aid to are kind of looking for a handout. Ukraine's not that way. They need a little help to beat back Putin and regain their territorial integrity and maintain their borders, but they're not looking for a handout. So those were kind of two important takeaways. The next thing is talking with people throughout the region, whether it's the Poles and the Moldovians or European ambassadors, they're all terrified that if Russia is not stopped in Ukraine, that they too will come under attack from Russia. And so that is a very real threat. And I'm the sister of a active duty Marine Corps captain. The last thing I want to see is our military getting dragged into something bigger, which is why I think it's so important to provide the military support and some limited humanitarian support to Ukraine so that they can stop Vladimir Putin from going any further.
So you mentioned that, 1,300 miles wide travels. How close did you get to the front lines? And, how did your perspective shift in different parts of the country? You mentioned, kind of the whole areas under air raid warnings, but are there particular areas that stood out to you one way or another?
Yeah, the closer we would get to the front lines, the more acute the threat was. We went to Kharkiv, which another city under constant attack, and where we were was about 15 miles from the front lines, but certainly reachable by Russian drones with explosives and missiles as well. So it's kind of one of those places where you go there, you quickly look around, you assess the situation, and then you're quick to get out too, because you recognize that you're in an area that comes under constant attack. So you could certainly feel that the tension was higher the closer you were able to get to the front lines. But still, there is that threat throughout the entire country. And so people are understandably nervous. And I just can't imagine living every single day under that kind of threat, where you're constantly having to run down to a bomb shelter, you're thinking about, where your children are at all times, you can't get a decent night's sleep because the air raid alerts are constantly going off and you have to find shelter. And those who sometimes don't find shelter are the ones who end up dying. So that's the high level stress environment that regular folks are living in. Let me mention one other thing. I'm a mom of two young kids. I send my kids to school every day. That's not the situation in Ukraine. Ukrainian kids either have to go to school online or, as we found in the city of Kharkiv, close to the front lines, kids are going to school in underground subway stations. Imagine that. It is that dangerous in the country that the kids are going to school in what's effectively a bomb shelter underground. Thank goodness they can go to school to give them some sense of normalcy. But I think that illustrates how risky it is and the constant threat that Ukrainians are under.
Can you share with us, one personal experience or reflection from your trip that particularly was moving for you? Was there a person you met or spoke to or one place that stood out in particular?
I think, Sam, we met with some of the governors who are also military leaders of these states, which are called oblasts, but these states in throughout Ukraine. And as we sat in meetings with them and they would talk about the conditions in their communities, their states, including Luhansk and Donetsk, those are the ones that are Russian occupied, we would ask them what they need. They talked about needing military equipment. They talked about how they're starting to run low and how important it is that we provide them that military equipment, along with our European allies who are doing it as well. So the need for that, the need for medical supplies so that they can treat some of those frontline soldiers. So those are two things. But as an American who previously messaged on behalf of the State Department and explained our foreign policy to the world, one thing that really struck me, sitting in those meetings and the governors are speaking Ukrainian, and I heard my name spoken in Ukrainian. And I thought, what on earth are they saying? And they were thanking me for having talked about Russian aggression when I was at the State Department, for having talked about Russian disinformation, for having talked about how Vladimir Putin lies and what a strong threat he is to international stability and security. And my big takeaway was what we say and what we do in America matters. People hear it around the world in the hardest hit places. And those words of support help keep them going, provide them with encouragement to keep on doing what they need to do. So, just imagine being so far from home and hearing that gratitude from from Ukrainian officials. And they remembered things that I said several years ago. So that was a big personal takeaway for me.
And on that subject and bringing it back a little closer to home here in Washington, the Senate passed a bill Monday with supplemental funding for military aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. But the Speaker of the House said that the House is not going to take up the measure. So we're kind of we're in a bit of a hung jury situation at the moment. Do you think there's any likelihood of Congress passing another package of aid for Ukraine, or is this, you know, getting to the end of the line? And what will the consequences be for the people you were talking with and you met with if U.S. aid runs out?
Well, there are still some procedural maneuvers in the House that that can be done to assist with getting that aid through. One of the things I said to the Ukrainians, you know, we're a democracy here in America. We have a lot of debates. Sometimes those debates are really colorful. And we should have those debates. It's right to debate what happens in Ukraine and elsewhere around the country. But in the end, as Americans, we tend to do the right thing. We tend to recognize that democracy is under threat, that bad things are happening around the world, that we need to step in and assist where we can when the U.S., if we're not stepping in, could end up getting dragged into something much larger. So I think in the end, we will do the right thing. But of course, Ukrainians and our allies throughout Europe are nervous. I do want to point out that Europeans have stepped up in really an unprecedented fashion. You know, we talk about the importance for Europeans to fight this and to help out because it's in their backyard. And we're absolutely right to say that. Europe is actually taking the lead. One of the things I learned in talking to folks in Poland is that they're spending 4% of their GDP on defense spending, which is great. That's actually double what they had committed to do. That's double the NATO required kind of commitment. And so we see Poland and other countries really stepping up in an unprecedented fashion. But we need to do our part too, because again, if we don't stop Putin where he is right now in Ukraine, this conflict will grow, and it will grow beyond Ukraine, and we will get dragged into something much, much larger. I'm not warmongering. I'm trying to advocate for peace and supporting our democratic friends in Europe.
So is there anything you have to say to the people involved in the debate for aid to Ukraine who talk about the need to secure our own border, and how can we be spending so much money or spending so much time focusing on another country's border on the far side of the world when we can't even handle our own southern border?
Sure. We absolutely need to secure our own border. We need to do that. But we can do both things at the same time. And that's what America has to do to be able to manage multiple crises at the same time. We can secure our border, but we can also help take care of the threat that is only growing in Europe. So I think we need to do both. And Congress ought to do that.
Thank you so much for joining us, Heather.
Hey, Sam, thank you so much. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your interest in this subject.
Absolutely. And thank you all for listening.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Flash Focus is a production of the Vandenberg Coalition. To connect and stay up to date on our work, follow our account on X, @VandenbergCo. Or visit www.vandenbergcoalition.org to learn more and subscribe to our weekly newsletter on foreign policy and national security, Beyond the Water's Edge. Until next time, I'm Samuel Byers, and this is Vandenberg Flash Focus.